everybody, and welcome to our review of HBO's new hit series, Westworld. And then we are going over episodes 3 and 4. So I'm Debbie from Brainberry Tarts.
And I'm Michael from Divas, Dropkicks, and Dives.
And let's see, episode 3. Let's just get right into this because I'm like kind of excited about all the stuff that's going on right now. And it's all so amazing. Episode 3, The Stray. Elsie and Stubbs head into the hills in pursuit of a hot host. And that dude was not hot. Gross. So, yeah, like, no. Sorry, let me try that again. Elsie and Stubbs head into the hills in pursuit of a missing host. Teddy gets a new backstory, which sets him in pursuit of a new villain, leaving Dolores alone in Sweetwater. Bernard investigates the origins of madness and hallucinations within the hosts. William finds an attraction. Wow, I can't read. William finds an attraction he'd like to pursue and drags Logan along for the ride. So.
Hashtag team fuck Logan.
No. There is nothing you can say that will have me disliking Logan. I'm sorry. I love that dude.
He's the worst.
You're the worst.
You're the worst.
You know what? Whatever. Anyway. All right. Well, let's just go with something that Michael and I have been arguing about since this show, since we watched the show, is the timeline of Westworld. So right.
I guess a little bit of backstory. Since we watched the first 2 episodes, there have been a lot of fan theories that have come out.
I was getting into this.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. You got this.
You know, I think we started to talk about it on the last episode. I don't think we got too in-depth with it. But one of the more popular theories out right now is that what's going on with William and Logan is not happening at the same time as a lot of the other stuff that's going on with Bernard and Dr. Ford, with the what we know now as the Delos Corporation, and what's all going on there. That we have the stuff with William and Logan is in the past, presumably.
Potentially, Logan is actually the man in black.
No, that's William.
William. I apologize. Logan's the hot one. William's the crazy one.
Yeah, part of the theory is that what we're seeing with William is the backstory to him eventually becoming the man in black. So,
which I'm on board for. I just don't necessarily think it's the case. But
the most prevailing rumor or evidence of this is the fact that in William's introduction, there was the different looking Westworld logo as he was coming off the tram and going into his orientation, quote unquote. That is a different logo than what we've seen other times in the I want to say like the behind the scenes areas. Mm-hmm. So that's, and of course, you know, Bad Robot being the production company behind this, having done Lost and some other shows, time manipulation is something that they're known for. So that's giving people the idea. You're also seeing other things inside of Westworld that are happening while William and Logan are doing their thing that you don't see when other people are going through, especially in Sweetwater with the whorehouse. William and Logan keep running into Clementine, but we never see Maeve while they're there. So that's kind of interesting. Also, something I pointed out to Deb is the guy that maybe episode 4. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but the guy in episode... No, they meet him in 3.
They meet him in 3.
Yeah, that escorts William and Logan on some quests. His outfit is very similar to Teddy's outfit that we saw in episodes 1 and 2.
The first time we see him in episode 3 is actually when he's bringing in a bounty. He brings it to the sheriff's office and turns the guy in and then says he's going to go take care of some things. And then the guy breaks loose and William winds up shooting him. And that same dude, the bounty hunter, walks up and is like, you know, thanks for killing this dude. I'll take it from here. That's the first time you see him in episode 3.
Okay. Yeah,
so he's the one dropping off his bounty at the
So if you go back and throughout definitely episodes 1 and 2, Teddy, who is a bounty hunter, has a very similar outfit. So that's one of the popular theories that's going around now that kind of I would say has kind of definitely influenced me, maybe more so than Deb, But that's something that she and I keep going back and forth about. So anyways, go ahead.
I am not going to say that it is not the case. I think that it's an interesting theory, and there's definitely things that lend credence to it. But we have proof between episodes 3 and 4 that there's definitely some, you know, my Doctor Who's going to come out here, some timey-wimey stuff going on. But I don't necessarily believe that William becomes the Man in Black, mainly because William has a mole on his face and the Man in Black doesn't, and that kind of thing. If you're going to mess with time, you better be prepared to keep those little idiosyncrasies, you know, out of it. But then again, I could be very wrong. I don't know. One of the things that he and I argue about, we'll get into it more in the 4th episode, is where the episodes between Bernard and Dolores, like where they actually take place in the timelines. So episode 3 starts out with, again, it starts out with us talking with Bernard speaking to Dolores.
And should clarify, all 4 episodes up to this point, the literal first shot of the episode has been Dolores's face.
Yeah. Her eyes, her face.
Yeah. Her eyes and her face. So there's a pattern there. That's going to mean something.
Yeah. So that's our first thing, is when are all these conversations actually taking place? Like, where within the timeline do those fit? Michael and I have totally differing theories on that. This first one, though, I feel like is pretty straightforward in episode 3. It kind of fits in pretty clearly. So we get started, and it's Dolores and Bernard, and he brings her the book, and they're reading about Alice in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that conversation? Did you take anything from it?
I mean, it's obviously whatever is going on with Dolores is about remembering things, is about her having independent thought. So, you know, she would say something interesting and then Bernard would go into analysis and ask her what led you to ask that or what led you to think that. So he's doing some sort of research with Dolores.
Right. That's what I got from it.
That's my primary takeaway from that. We do get kind of the first introduction to Bernard's son. Dolores asks about him. And then, of course, in one of the upcoming scenes, we see Bernard talking to his ex-wife, and we get more of his backstory. So, like that, his son comes up a lot in episode 3, and it's something that touches a nerve with Bernard.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing I got from that.
Yeah. And then Dolores wakes up in her bedroom and goes to, this is, I think, a major scene. She opens her dresser drawer and finds a gun in her dresser drawer.
Yeah, and it's kind of dirty, so I'm pretty sure this is the same gun that she dug up at the end of episode 2.
Right. But then the gun kind of mysteriously disappears.
Yeah, that's a weird thing that goes on in this episode. She puts the gun back in the drawer. She looks in the mirror, has some weird memories pop up. And then she opens the drawer again and the gun's gone. So the camera focuses in on the drawer. So we're supposed to pick up on the fact that the viewer, the gun that was there a few seconds ago is now not there. So we don't know. We have no idea why it's disappeared, how much time has passed, or was her finding the gun a memory? We don't know. Again, that's part of what goes into the time manipulation of this show.
Right. And that's, I feel like you nailed it. Like, for me, the gun reappears later on, and I probably should have started this out by saying spoilers.
Obviously. Well, that's kind of an unwritten rule.
Yeah, this is a serious spoiler-filled thing. So if you haven't seen the episodes, you really should not be listening to this, because we're about to seriously talk about like everything that happens. So later on, the gun does pop back up whenever she's facing off against your handlebar or your mutton chops dude that you love so much.
Yeah, I can't think of the character's name here. Rebus.
Yeah, so Rebus, the outlaw that you love so much, there's a scene later on where he's going to rape Dolores, and the gun sort of mysteriously appears in the haystack where Dolores is. My personal theory is simply that, like you said, we don't know how long Dolores was standing there. We don't know if it was a memory that she saw the gun, but it wasn't actually there. My thought is, if Dolores is continuously being raped in the haystack in the barn, then something in her memory is prompting her to protect herself in the barn. So that's why she finds the gun in the haystack in the barn.
Yeah.
That's just what I'm tossing out there. But the point there being, we don't know where the gun went. So that was kind of an interesting. I love all of this. Like, Michael and I have been arguing about it since we saw the episode, because there's so many little things that just make you go, what if it means this? And what if it means that? And, you know, he thinks this and I think that, and the world thinks something else. And I love stuff that gets in your head like that.
It's been a good show for it. I mean, we're only, you know, 4 episodes in, so.
But that's still almost half the season.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 1 episode till we're half a season in, so dadgum.
And hopefully if you watch through the end of episode 4, you got to see the sneak peek for next week, and it was good.
Oh, dear goodness.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we've got to, yeah. So, okay. Outside of Westworld, there are things in the making. Stuff is happening. Wheels are turning. I have to talk about this for a second because she's kind of driving me insane. The character Teresa Cullen, who plays the park director, what's the actress's name?
Sidsy Babbitt Knudsen.
That chick is driving me nuts. She drops in and out of her accent all the time.
It doesn't bother me. I get it. It's a byproduct of her being a, you know, foreign actress trying to do an English accent. I don't.
You know what? What was the guy that played in Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Bob Hoskins?
He was British.
Right.
You would never have known it from watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit. But that dude was British.
Yeah, some people can do it better than others. It doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you.
Alexander Skarsgård.
Again, it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you. It's okay.
It would be fine if she would pick an accent and stick with it. What bugs me about it is the fact that she's English 1 second and, or I shouldn't say, she's American, I guess, 1 second, and the next moment she's not. She literally drops in and out of her accent consistently. It makes me nuts. They could have just made her foreign. Nobody would have cared. Let her just stick with her regular accent. Why does she have to act American? I don't understand. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. She drives me nuts.
She's from Denmark.
And that's fine. She could have kept that accent and nobody would have cared.
Fair enough. Anyways, moving on.
Oh, she makes me crazy. Any scene with her in it, I don't like it. That's just official. I can't stand her for that reason. Okay, so in The Stray, the main storyline to The Stray is Diggs, which is the security officer played by one of the Yummy Hemsworth brothers, is going along with Bernard's junior officer. What's her name?
It was Elsie Hughes.
Elsie Hughes, yeah. So Elsie Hughes and Stubbs, the security dude, are chasing Diggs. After... Sorry, Diggs, not... Yeah, it is... No, I said Stubbs. Diggs, but it's Stubbs. You're right. I apologize. Stubbs, played by Luke Hemsworth, and Elsie Hughes are chasing after a lost host, a host that just goes off his programming and kind of strays off into the woods.
Right. They go to investigate where, like, his campsite, where he was. We find out there that he's a wood carver. His compatriots are kind of stuck in their loop because they need firewood to eat, and he's not there to cut the wood so they can make a fire.
And none of them are allowed to pick up the axe.
So they go into his tent and look at some of his wood carvings, and they have what looks to be a constellation of some sort carved into them.
Okay, hang on. I gotta say. First, I am pretty sure from this storyline, like, I'm just throwing this out there, I think Stubbs is a host.
I don't think so, but even if it is, it doesn't... I don't know.
I fully think Stubbs is a host. There are so many little things, like Elsie... Bernard's little, under person. There's little comments that she makes throughout the whole thing that just make me think, okay, I get that she's supposed to be just, like, getting digs at him and trying to, you know, get under his skin and annoy him, but you could also take it as he's a host and he's just there to protect her, and for her it's kind of ridiculous because you've got a host protecting her against other hosts. Also... he makes a crack about, well, maybe that's just part of my backstory. And to me, I'm like, that's probably, that could easily just be a very meta joke because it is part of his backstory because he's a host. And then also later on in the episode, the stray that they wind up finding is able to injure him. And hosts aren't supposed to be able to injure people, but he injures him. He doesn't injure Elsie, he injures him. So... I'm just throwing it out there. I think Stubbs is a host. Something else that also really bugged me about this, and it bugged me from the moment that I saw it, or from the moment that the dude tried to say it, Stubbs tries to tell Elsie that the carving, there's like a constellation or something.
It's a what looks like a constellation is carved into like a turtle shell.
Yeah, it's carved into all of his little carvings.
Right.
And Stubbs tries to tell Elsie that it's Orion. It's not Orion. It bugged me from the moment that he said that. I was like, that's not fucking Orion. It's not the constellation Orion.
Well, true, but again, they also cover that up in the next episode.
They do, but that wasn't until the next episode. So it was annoying me in that episode that they were like focusing in on this being the constellation Orion when clearly it's not. But, you know, whatever. They did fix it later, so I'm okay. Anyway.
The other big thing that we got from this episode, which personally I wasn't as big a fan of this one as I've been the other episodes so far, but one of the coolest things we got was a flashback. When Bernard visits Dr. Ford, we get him telling the story of a character by the name of Arnold that just popped up. That I guess some of the hosts have been referencing Arnold. And I think Elsie showed this in a video feed of one of the hosts kind of misbehaving. I think it was the guy from episode 2, the one that was pouring milk on everybody.
He was drinking. He drank. Yeah.
He mentioned Arnold.
And so did Abernathy, I guess.
So Bernard is talking to Dr. Ford. We get this really cool flashback with some really nice CGI work of a younger Anthony Hopkins.
It was brilliant.
At the beginning of the creation of Westworld. So that was really cool. But we get some backstory on this character, Arnold, and how he was he wanted to create consciousness within the hosts so that they behaved more like humans and had more independent thought like humans. And Dr. Ford didn't see things that way. And we get some vague ambiguity about what happened to Arnold. We just know he died at the park.
Well, he had an accident, and I'm making air quotes.
Right.
He had an accident, quote
so
unquote.
So we're not quite sure what happened to him, but
something I think, like, obviously, because, again, we're assuming that you've seen the episode, so we don't really have to explain it to you, but earlier in the episode, we got the scene where Ford was uploading Teddy's new backstory, which I love Ford as a character. Again, Anthony Hopkins is just brilliant. Pretty much anything he does, he is the creepiest. Just, he's a charming old man with a very, very creepy air about him, and maybe it's just because he played Hannibal Lecter and I'll just never be able to forgive him for that, but the dude is just brilliantly creepy. And he uploads this backstory to Teddy, and he's talking about this new character Wyatt, and Teddy's backstory is based around Wyatt. So one of the things that you find out in Wyatt's story is that he quote unquote heard the voice of God and went crazy because of it. And then after that scene, we have the scene where Ford is talking to Bernard, and he explains that Arnold's theory was that if he loaded the hosts with their own thoughts, where they heard their own thoughts on a loop enough, they would, you know, eventually gain consciousness from this. But that some of them thought of it as hearing the voice of God and went crazy. So one of the things that Ford says to Teddy while he's giving him the backstory, and it's absolutely brilliant, but he says, a fiction, like all great stories, is rooted in truth. It starts in a time of war, a world of flames with a villain called Wyatt. He's building this backstory about Wyatt, and I found it absolutely fascinating. Later on, he says something to Bernard, when legend becomes fact, you print the legend. So I'm seriously curious about how much of this backstory that he printed for Wyatt is based on Arnold. Like, what was Arnold's middle name or last name? Could it happen to have been Wyatt?
I don't know. I think that's reaching.
I genuinely don't, because this goes to, again, this is just another argument that Michael and I've been having about, I believe the character Wyatt is probably older and more like a longer planned program than just these recent incursions. But again, that's more in episode 4. We'll get more on that later. But that's just the basis that we got of it in episode three, were those interesting quotes that kind of tie those two scenes together very well. And I love that.
No.
I love this show. It's just everything that happens, you just go, what does that mean? And ooh, what could that mean? And ooh, I love that, because what could that mean? Anything that Ford says, every word out of that man's mouth is just like, oh, what does he mean?
Right.
What's he talking about? I need to know. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Okay, so episode three, what was your favorite part?
I didn't particularly like the episode. I mean, I think the coolest part was the flashback, getting some more backstory on Dr. Ford. But overall, the whole stray host thing didn't... I mean, I wasn't too interested in it. The ending of the episode's kind of interesting in that, once he gets out of that crevice, you think he's going to smash Elsie, and instead he just starts smashing himself. So it's just more indication of the host being weird. But ultimately this episode was setting up more backstory for the story to continue from here on out, which is, I know after 1 and 2, they had to pump the brakes a little bit and fill in some more information there. So that it did its job. But compared to what episodes 1 and 2 were, and even at, episode 4, it wasn't my favorite. So, I mean, I think the thing I liked the most was the flashback.
The flashback. There were a couple of little moments in this one. There wasn't anything just huge in this episode that I really cared for. I did like, there's a point where Teddy is trying to teach Dolores how to shoot a gun before they go on a shootout. It's after he's gotten his backstory. He and Dolores are standing there. He puts the gun in her hand and she tries to fire and she can't do it. And the way that Teddy accepts it is that she's just unable to pull the trigger. Like there's something in her that she's too emotional or too womanly or whatever. Like there's just something that won't allow her to pull the trigger.
Well, and he just makes the cute quotes like some hands aren't meant to pull the trigger.
Right.
Yeah.
Which it kind of makes it sound like, it's because she's a good person and can't do it. But if you look at the way she's holding that gun, she's gripping it so tightly. And like, it looks like her knuckles are just like, it looks like she's seriously pulling on that trigger and it just is not moving. And then her face, the way that she looks, it doesn't look like a woman who's like, oh, I'm too scared to pull the trigger. It looks like somebody who's like, why the fuck isn't my hand working? So to me, when she says, I can't, she's not saying I can't because I'm just not the type of person who can pull a trigger. She's saying I can't because my finger suddenly stopped moving and won't let me pull the trigger.
Right.
So I think she's literally not programmed to pull the trigger, and that pisses her off. Like, shouldn't say pisses her off. It like really bothers her. Like, right. All of a sudden her hand stops working. So that's my theory. And I think given what we know about Dolores, that's kind of brilliant. And well, I love
especially,
that.
Especially, at the end of the episode, she is able to, right. to shoot she's, Rebus.
She winds up shooting Rebus. So yeah. To me, that's just brilliant. And yeah. I love that. So that moment was really interesting to me. And then I know it's like a really cheesy thing, but I loved the host, guest that was running around with Teddy at the beginning of the episode, the chick with the braid. I thought she was just cool. I was like, I could see myself in that character just like running around and acting crazy or, shooting the bad guys and just being all interested in the bounties and stuff. I could see myself doing that. So that was pretty cool. Yeah. And then again, at the very, it's not really a favorite part, but, we should say that this episode does end with Dolores walking into William and Logan's camp.
Yeah.
Playing with the timeline theory, if this is happening now or if this is happening in the past, if it's happening in the past, this is one of the other times that she may have run away from her ranch instead of being raped. Or it's the previous moment where we're actually watching her do it. So we're not really sure there. But those were my favorite parts. Least favorite parts? Yeah.
Again, I think the storyline with literally what the episode's titled for, The Stray,
mm-hmm.
the host that just wanders off. Like, we get no, at least so far, we have no explanation about, he didn't say anything. So we don't know what he was thinking or what led him to walk off other than his carvings. Like right now, it's just he was there to smash his head in. So,
Well, I mean, they're going to investigate it. We get a little bit more of that in episode 4 where they talk about the investigating.
But I mean, at least for this episode, that was kind of disappointing.
One of the things they said, if you watch the little after, where they talk about the show a little bit after the fact HBO Go, one of the things that the writer said was that he used to actually work on a cattle ranch and, you know, cattle would go missing sometimes. You would just get these strays and you would have to go round them up. You have to go up into the hills and find this stray piece, this stray cattle and, round it up and bring it home. And that's kind of what he was working on, was that it was the idea that they have all of these, you know, hosts and they're basically just essentially cattle. Like it's just a stray. You have to go out there and round them up sometimes, bring them back. They get off their programming somehow. So that was the idea. I also fully maintain that Stubbs is a host, and that's why they had to do it, was to show the reasons why he's a host. But
it's possible. They've already shown from episode 2, you know, William's introduction, the woman that kind of helped introduce him to Westworld, that hosts do exist in
outside of
Westworld itself. So it's entirely possible.
I fully believe Stubbs is a host. Anyway, my least favorite part was Teresa Cullen. Pretty much anything with her in it, just because anytime she starts to talk and starts dropping in and out of her accent, it just annoys me and I can't keep up with it. I disconnect from the character immediately. So, all right. Overall, what would you rate episode 3, The Stray?
I'd probably give it a 3. Like, again, it didn't have the impact that the first two episodes did. And then in hindsight, you know, episode 4 felt a lot better. Like it wasn't a bad episode. It was just, they had to pump the brakes and they had to kind of lay some groundwork for where things are headed and why things are happening. Like, you know, we didn't hear about Arnold the first two episodes. So, you know, they had to lay out that backstory. You know, we got a little bit more with the Man in Black, and like that stuff's good. So it wasn't a terrible episode. It was a serviceable episode. Like it was fine. It did what it had to do, but when it was done, I didn't have the sensation of like really being excited. I just watched that episode. Like I was more excited for what was coming next week. In this case, episode 4,
when they showed the clips of episode 4, it was like, oh, that's going to be good.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. I would go 3, maybe 3.5, 3.8 even, just going up the scale. It was still a good episode. It's still a good show. I mean,
I'm just saying compared to any of the other 3 episodes that have aired so far, and granted, we're reviewing this with a little hindsight.
The other 2 episodes.
Before it, yeah. But I mean, it wasn't... Not much really happened. It was just backstory.
There were still some flashes of brilliance and just amazing moments. And again, anytime Anthony Hopkins is on screen is just brilliant. So I can't complain too much. I'd go 3.8. I would still give it a pretty good score just because it was still an amazing episode. So, all right. That leads us to episode 4, Dissonance Theory. Dolores joins William and Logan on a bounty hunt in the Badlands. The Man in Black with Lawrence in tow finds a critical clue in his search to unlock the maze. Dr. Ford and Teresa discuss the future of the park. Maeve is troubled by a reoccurring vision. This episode, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So much goodness.
It was a good episode. It definitely carried some more stuff forward, so...
So episode 4, this is where we really get into the timey-wimey, what happened when and why. I have a theory that the scene that you see with Dolores, between Bernard and Dolores as the episode begins, actually happens in the timeline of things right after. It either happens after Dolores runs away.
See, that's you're already leading me into my counterpoint. Like, you can't be bouncing around within the past and the future. You're gonna
confuse
the hell out of your audience. So I think that interview happened in the present time as it happened. You think it happened in the past of the present time.
I think that it either happened in the past, before the thing with William and Logan, whenever that was, it either happened way before that. It had to have happened way before that, because obviously, clearly, they don't pick her up and take her away from William and Logan to go have this interview and then bring her back and drop her back off with William and Logan.
Well, that's my exact point. Her interactions with William and Logan are in the past. Her interview with Bernard is in the present, as far as our interpretation of it is concerned.
Right.
So she never...
either that interview happened before the stuff with William and Logan, and she gets the information about the maze before the stuff with William and Logan, because she already knows about the maze when she's in that little town later on and she sees the little girl and she's drawing the maze in the dirt. Dolores already knows about the maze at that point. So my theory is that episode that you see with Bernard and Dolores was actually the very first interlude that Bernard and Dolores ever had. And she was dreaming about that when she woke up in the camp with Logan and William. That's my theory.
I argue that because she's already... I don't think that they would have put her first interview with Bernard after she's already on the show had several interviews with Bernard. They're not going to screw with you that way, because you have no way of verifying when that happened later on.
I disagree. I can think of several ways you can verify that.
I mean, short of Bernard saying, "Remember the first time we talked and I told you about the maze?" Like,
that's one way, and that's pretty easy. That's an easy click there.
I just think for a show that's dealing with manipulation of time, if you do it too much, you're just going to confuse everybody and nobody knows when anything's happening. None of it makes sense.
Well, but the idea is that it all clicks into Memento. Place.
It's not like happening in reverse. But I mean...
that we know of.
At least if that's the way they're going with this stuff, then somebody's going to have to do a supercut of everything in chronological order at some point.
Well, okay,
I think at the very least you have stuff going on in the past and stuff going on in current time. But you're not going to have stuff going on in current time out of order, and you're not going to have stuff going on in the past out of order.
See, I disagree. I think it could all be played out of order, and then later on...
That's the kind of shit that happened with Lost that killed it for everybody. People got sick of it because it was shit happening out of order.
Right, and you have the same production company working with Westworld that did it with Lost. Right. And my hope would be that they have learned their lesson and can now do it the right way, so that by the time you get to episodes 9 and 10, everything clicks into order in the right way. Mm. But I'm not saying that it's happening out of order. I'm saying that what saw...
You are. You're saying that because she's already had several private interviews with Bernard.
This couldn't have been the first one. It could be, because she was dreaming about it in the camp there with William. The thing is that she already knows about the maze. If he's just now talking to her about the maze in that interview, then how does she already know about the maze when she's with William and Logan?
Well, we don't know if she didn't know it already. That's not necessarily the first time she's heard about it. That's, again, assuming that her interactions with William and Logan are in the past. But we also don't necessarily... this is what I'm talking about. Like, they're not going to manipulate time within manipulating time. There has to be rules. There has to be an order to this somewhere. Otherwise, what's the point?
The writers can do what they want as long as it all clicks together later.
Every show that has attempted that has lost its audience for that very purpose.
Unless they make it work later.
I'm just saying it's
a possibility. We will have to agree to disagree. My other theory was that was the interview. Later on, Stubbs says... They flag Dolores with behavior and say, you know, have them bring her in to check her out. And I think that might be the interview where.
But see, I think that's the next episode, because we saw Ford talking to her.
So I agree with you that that's probably, you're probably right, but it could also just be that. I also think
that's not correct, because... Again, Bernard's talking to Dolores in secret. If behavior has flagged her to bring her in to get her checked out, that's all going to be on the books. Bernard would not be having a secret conversation with her as part of a routine checkup.
Unless he brings her in first, has that talk with her, and then takes her upstairs for her regular routine checkup.
That's if I'm trying to do something sneaky, I'm not going to do it that close to when somebody's needing a monitor.
There's nothing that says he has a specific amount of time he has to maintain. Obviously, he has access. I mean, that's a stupid
move if you're doing it. That's cutting it close. But, well, again, that's
he's all. Not necessarily doing wise things by having these conversations with her constantly.
No, but he's not going to put himself... I mean, he's going to do everything he can to mitigate risk.
Himself. Yeah, but he's already been putting himself
right,
at
risk. Right, so he's not going to make it worse by having this conversation with her and then just taking her upstairs for her normal interview. Again, behavior's supposed to get her, and that's not his division. So he wouldn't be the one to retrieve her anyways.
The thing is, she hadn't run away from the ranch that we know of when he had that conversation.
Not necessarily, but we've already saw in episode 3, she's obviously run from the ranch several times before.
Right, I agree with that. I think that the little time lapses in her memory that you see, like the one where she gets shot, but then it suddenly, you know, flashes back and she's fine again. I think those little time lapses show that she has run away before. I think that's also why one of the things that shows that maybe the stuff that's happening with William and Logan was the past. It could have been one of those moments where Dolores ran away from the ranch. So I think that that is something that could have happened multiple times, but we don't know when that happened is what I'm saying. Like, there's no way of nailing down when that time happened. So I think the two most logical times is that was a memory of like maybe their first interaction, or that was happening either when she was brought in for questioning or right before she was brought in for questioning.
Right.
So that's what I think. But Michael and I have gone round and round on that one. You guys let us know what you think. We move on to Maeve's storyline. I love Maeve's character. I think what they're doing with her is really interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Because she's got that weird, she's seeing the technicians in her dreams or whatever. The way that it sets up for her closing scene to the episode where they find the bullet fragment in her body, everything about that, just the way she's going. The only thing I don't understand is the fact that they've allowed the Native Americans in the show to have a religious icon that's clearly one of their constructs.
That's a perfect cover for them, so that if they are seen by the Native Americans, there's a way to cover that up. Because they've said before that, yes, they do memory wipes, but occasionally somebody forgets to do it.
Right.
Or something slips past them. So, yeah, I think that's, you know, from our realistic understanding of Native Americans and their culture, like, I think that's awesome that they incorporated that into a fictional version of Native Americans, that they do have, like, gods that they would see walk the earth, which is what we know of Native Americans. I loved that. I thought it was amazing.
I didn't look at it like that. That's probably a good way to look at it. I do think that everything that she's going through is really interesting, though, and how she basically is like, I think her concept is maybe she's died a couple of times or she's not going to die. Whatever it is, I'm interested to see how that plays out. So I think her
it's really cool. They're starting to have like a Groundhog Day
effect
in a less humorous way, but they're starting to remember their previous day's existence. So there's a lot you can play with that.
Moving on in this episode, you see Dolores again. She's traveling with William and Logan, and they go into a little Spanish town, and it looks like it's the same town that Lawrence was from in episode 2, and where the man in black killed his wife and met his daughter, and the daughter tells him where the maze begins or whatever. She kind of has the vision of that little girl sitting on a fountain who draws the maze in the dirt. And in that vision, she sees a little white church with a black steeple. And that makes you wonder, it looked like it was in the past. So it looked like it was a memory of something she had seen before, which to me says, maybe that's the steeple that Ford was looking at that was buried.
Yeah, I think it is. One of the theories was that what Ford is unearthing for his expansion pack, for lack of a better term, is part of the original park that suffered the
malfunction
30 years ago, which, again, we hypothesized was based off the movie, but in this universe, it may not be. They may have had their own sort of cataclysm in the park that led to some of it being buried or whatever, and that this was him unearthing some of it. So
it was based on... I wonder, because going back to episode 3, where he says...
He said...
I'm going to go back and look at my notes.
All great fiction is based in truth. Right.
He says, a fiction that, like all great stories, is rooted in truth. That's the line.
Right.
So I wonder, because again, I'm going back to this whole Arnold thing. What if Wyatt is supposed to represent Arnold in a way, and... We know that Arnold was killed in the park. We know that Arnold went crazy. What if Wyatt's supposed to represent Arnold in a way, and he's basically just recreating Arnold's storyline as a fiction for the park?
I mean, there's a lot that could be going on here. We could also argue that Arnold's not dead. That Arnold's what's at the center of the maze. I mean, like...
That's true, too.
Like, and then maybe Arnold's a host himself, and he's been locked up. To keep him safe or something. Like, you know, who knows at this point? There's all sorts of speculation.
I know. It's just fun to speculate. It's just awesome. I love it so much. Let's see. Okay. I have some very specific favorite parts of this episode. But I have to say, because I know you can't stand Logan, I love that character so, so much. I think he has some of the best lines in the episode. You see William and Logan go on this shootout, or they go to hunt down this criminal, you know, wanted criminal, and they take the bounty hunter right. with them, and they eventually break into this, you know, farmstead, and they shoot everybody, and as they're riding off, the tables kind of turn, but Logan has some of the best lines in the episode. I know you don't like him.
He does. He's that douchey guy that you play online who doesn't follow the rules.
I love him.
And I hate that. Like in this, and now, I mean, like, my, you know, the cool part with him is when they're in the house and they're having the shootout and then they're trying to get the bounty, like he runs out of ammo on the guy they're supposed to retrieve, and he knocks him out with the butt of his gun. The guy drops his gun. Logan picks it up and is like, "Oh, sweet upgrade!" Like that's
another Red Dead moment.
That's such a video game thing that's just amazing. So like that was cool.
When he takes off into the homestead at the beginning of the shootout, when he says, "Slap leather, cocksuckers."
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I will say he's warming up to me. I just hate the lack of appreciation for where he's at. Right. Like, it's play the game the right way. You know, he can be a douche.
He's done it before.
I guess that's part of it.
And you've said this before, like, you play it the first time the right way, but then after a while, you just get to the point where you're like, you know what, I've played this game, I know how it works.
True.
I'm going to just
But if I was to bring somebody along, and like, in this case, William... Like, I would play along, I'd play the rules with them because it's their first time. Like, his problem is he wants William to experience the park the way he's experiencing it right now after he's done it a dozen or whatever times. Like, for William, this is all new. So the friendly thing and the right thing to do would be to play it along with William the way he's playing the game.
But Logan's not a friendly or nice person.
Right.
He's just a fun, interesting character. So. I also like the point later on where, again, he has some of the best lines in the freaking show. He kills the bounty hunter guy. He releases Slim, which is the guy they were going after to begin with. And Dolores, you know, is upset that he's about to release this guy. And she runs up. She's like, "You're not going to release him." And he pulls the gun on Dolores. And then William pulls the gun on Slim. And... You know, Logan gets all excited. "Look, we've both got one, and I'm not going to fuck mine either."
Right.
I'm just like, that's so... He has the best lines. Yeah. Come on. I love him. I think he is hysterical.
We'll see.
I laugh every time he's on screen, and I root for him, because that is how it should be. I'm trying to think. There was so much good in this episode that it's hard to...
Well, I'll go with my favorite part. My favorite part was the Man in Black's story. Of course, in episode 3, the little girl told him to go to the...
Episode 2. Yeah.
Okay, the Blood Arroyo and find where the snake lays its eggs. So we find out that the snake is actually... Oh, God, I didn't...
A tattoo on
was,
one of...
Armistice.
Yeah.
Was her name.
That's one of Hector's minions, but she's right. This blonde-headed chick with a snake tattoo.
Right, and like her story, but... You know, my favorite part was the Man in Black takes Lawrence to this fort where there's some U.S. Marshals, which was funny there's several U.S. Marshals there, and the head U.S. Marshal is African-American. So Debbie and I kind of looked at each other and just in classic Mel Brooks fashion, just both blurted out at the same time, a black sheriff? So... I know that's a horrible joke, but
it worked in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. So, but anyways,
that's the truth. That was the first thing we both thought.
Yeah, it was cool. So he gives Lawrence to these U.S. Marshals. They decide to arrest the Man in Black as well, and they throw him in a cell with Hector Escaton.
I love Hector.
Now, what was cool about this was on the way there, the Man in Black had these cigars, and offered one to the U.S. Marshal that was in the stagecoach with him. And the Man in Black kept one. The Marshal confiscated the other two. When he gets into the cell, he lights one. And then we cut to the control tower for Westworld.
Yeah.
And they said someone's requesting
a pyrotechnic effect.
So, which I find interesting. And I think
the match is a request. The
right.
match was actually a programmed request for a pyrotechnic.
Well, no, the match wasn't, but the actual cigar blowing up was.
No, the match was the request.
Oh, okay.
The match was the request for a pyrotechnic event for two charges, which would be him blowing up the cell,
and then one of the awesome, right after that, U.S. Marshal smoking the cigar and it literally blows up his face. So, yeah.
That was so gross.
But that was a neat moment giving more backstory to the Man in Black that he has, you know, that much.
He has that much VIP
connection. Yeah. With what's going on, and again in the control tower.
Well, then there's also how the game works, all the little neat intricacies of like striking a match is a request for a pyrotechnic event. That's amazing to me how all these little things work together.
So, but yeah, him getting Hector out and I like the Man in Black more so than I like Logan.
I love the Man in Black. He is easily the coolest character in the show.
Right.
I'm just saying I like Logan too.
Well, he's very meta about it. He talks to the hosts, you know, making them well aware that they're not in control, that there's more going on around here. But it's like he still plays the game
the way you're supposed to.
He plays outside the rules, and he knows that he is exceptional in this place, but he still plays his role.
Like, yeah, you can tell he enjoys
it. Again, when he first meets Armistice, and says that he wants to go with them, and one of her men says, we have enough men. So what does he do? He just shoots two men. He's like, I see two openings here.
That's one of my favorite parts of the show is when he just walks up. He's like, oh, well, I'll just make myself a space. I agree with you. I love the Man in Black. He's easily the best character in the show. Maybe, you know what, that's debatable because Ford is pretty cool too. Like, those are probably the two best characters in the show. But it's still just one of those... I still like Logan. I'm not saying I like Logan for different reasons.
So, I don't, as far as the least favorite part of this episode, I really loved this episode. This was right on par with the first two for me. So I don't have anything I really disliked. I'm intrigued to see where things go with Maeve now that she's becoming aware that, you know, I'm trying to figure out how much she actually recalls. Because if you noticed early in the episode, like, she did the drawing of what did Hector call it?
The spirit.
No, there was a word for it.
It was something about spirit.
Anyways, she drew it, and then
they were devils. They were something.
Well, they talk about them walking between worlds.
Yeah.
But that she drew it, Then she opens up the floorboard to hide it, and then she finds a stack of another dozen or so drawings that of the same thing that she's already done.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm really intrigued to see how much does she start remembering, and how does that, how she's able to, yeah, to play out with it. So, I don't really have anything disappointing. We haven't talked about the fact that Dr. Ford's scene with Teresa, where
he's... That was my next question.
You know, yeah, I mean, this was kind of a big reveal that...
that anything he does is awesome.
They're in this... I don't know what you would call that place. It was just like a really nice mansion,
like a vineyard
in Westworld.
It looked like a vineyard.
And he actually sat her down in the chair that she had sat in once as a kid when she had visited Westworld as like a psychological play, and basically discusses how she, you know, she's not of Westworld, that she works for, you know, Delos, and that he's got things under control, and that he's working on things, and to basically kind of scares her into telling her stay out of his way.
That conversation, I was going to say, like, I think that's my favorite part of the movie. I keep calling it a movie, the show. That's my favorite part of the show, is that conversation between him and Teresa, which, okay, again, I like that because A, Ford's doing all the talking and you don't have to hear her slip in and out of her stupid accent, which she annoys the fuck out of me. B, because she annoys me so bad, Ford scares her and I'm okay with that. And because just that, again, that character just annoys me so much. But again, just it goes back to Anthony Hopkins is just brilliant. Everything he does, the way he describes, like, I can't explain the way he says, he's like, I've known many of you over the years, meaning like park operators, you know, Teresa's position and the money people or whatever. I've known a bunch of you people, and we always, and then he stops and corrects himself. Well, almost always get along. And you just, Ford is one of those characters that you're like, so what happened to those almosts? Like, right. You don't really know, like, what he's capable. I mean, you like to think that he wouldn't be capable of doing something terrible, but the way he basically proclaims himself a god inside his own little world, you just have to kind of wonder, like, what exactly is he capable of? And you know, that power play against her, where he clearly shows that he's the one in control here, and the fact that he gives no fucks about completely tearing up this world that he's created, where, although that, you know, clearly terrifies his investors, he's like, this is my world and I'll do what I want. Right. You know, I do what I want. So yeah, that whole conversation was absolutely, I loved it. It was chilling and it makes that character that much more interesting. And I am completely okay with him scaring what's her fuck, because she needs to pick an accent and stick with it.
So I'm definitely after watching this episode, I'm excited to see where they go next. And of course, in the little snippet after the credits, they showed that the Man in Black and Dr. Ford actually have a conversation.
Yes, that, so I'm
thoroughly excited to find out what's
like. Teddy saves Dr. Ford's life because the Man in Black attacks him. Like that, yeah. Just
definitely a lot to be excited about for next week.
My second favorite part of the episode is right there at the end, the part between Hector and Maeve. Like, I just, that whole setup was really cool. Yeah. I liked the way that played out.
So
my least favorite part, I will say this. I know I said that Logan got the best lines. I also laughed really hard whenever the Man in Black and Lawrence are traveling to the next part of their plan, and they're talking about Wyatt. And Lawrence is like trying to tell the Man in Black about how bad Wyatt is, and, you know, maybe you shouldn't do this. And his actual line is, I'm just trying to convince you not to get yourself and me as a bystander killed. And the Man in Black's like, oh, I won't get me killed. And Lawrence is like, don't think I didn't notice the distinction there. Yeah. And I'm like, I lolled. I know that's stupid, but I lolled. I was like, that's funny. But my least favorite part is, again, it's this part between Bernard and Teresa Cullen where they're sleeping together and she gets up and she's talking about this meeting she has with the board. And then it's right after that that she has the meeting with Ford. And, like, pretty much everything that she was talking, like, Bernard being nice to her and zipping her dress and basically breaking down her posture and, you know, telling her how to, you know, spunk up her confidence or whatever. I'm like, I don't care. The woman annoys me. And just that whole thing, just I'm just like, nah, nope, I'm good.
I think her character is going to be redeemed by the end of the season. I think she's meant to start out as, like, this stuck-up corporate, boss manager type, but they're going to humanize her throughout. They're humanizing her in each episode so that at the end, when she'll have some sort of a confrontation with Ford or with whoever the villain is on that side, like she'll be the savior or she'll end up getting killed or something in some form or fashion. And you're ultimately going to feel sorry for what happens to her or be happy for what happens to her. Like she's not meant to be a hated character like she was in the first episode or two where she was like this evil micromanaging bitch. Eh. Like they're making, and not obviously your accent issue, I don't think is going away. Ever. But
if she doesn't pick an accent, I will never care what happens to her. She's that annoying to me.
Not that big a deal, but
it,
okay.
It is.
So definitely excited for the next 2 weeks of episodes.
Yes.
So
what do you rate this episode?
I mean, this was easily a four and a half. You know, it was really good.
What kept it from being a five?
I don't know. Nothing in particular. It's just we're still early in the story. I think that's there are more questions being asked than answered, and that's really cool in the infancy of a show. But I go back to Lost. Lost got to a point where they just kept asking questions and not answering them.
Right.
I don't think they're going to have that problem with this show, but I am starting to get worried because they're just putting questions on top of questions on top of questions.
The one thing that I really, really like about this show, I think we've talked about it before, I'm not sure, but I'll bring it up again. This show in its entirety, all what, seven seasons?
They have said that in development, they have mapped out the entire series, which I believe is 5 to 6 seasons.
So every single episode, every single twist and turn and nook and cranny has already been planned out. So things that are happening in this season are planting the seeds that aren't going to come to fruition until like the fifth season. And I personally love that. I like that kind of storytelling, that kind of methodical planting of seeds and questions and things like that. Like I like those kinds of things. I like the long game, but it is a gamble because that's exactly what it is, a long game. And it's really difficult for some people to see that and to maintain interest in it, even if the payoff is huge. So you are gambling on losing a portion of your audience to people who can't, whose patience isn't going to allow them to play it out over the long game. Right. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. But frankly, I mean, as long as they keep, you know, giving us something in the, so far it's been like one really good episode, one kind of meh episode, one really good episode, one kind of meh episode. Cause we've got two episodes that are really, really awesome and two episodes that are kind of, they're okay. They could have been better, but they still made me happy in ways. So if they keep that up, I'll be all right.
Yeah.
With it. So so you said a 4.5. I'll agree with you. I'll go with 4.5. I really liked this episode. The only thing that kept it from being a 5 to me is that it just didn't have anything in it that really blew me away. The first episode was a 5 because it really, just for what it was, it blew me away. And it had that extra oomph to it. Whereas this one, there wasn't anything that just really made me go, oh, he just did that. Or, oh my gosh, that just happened. There wasn't anything that really pushed me over the edge in a way that I didn't see coming or I just really was shocked by. So in a good way. Or just really left me craving more. Next week might do it because Ford and the Man in Black on screen at the same time. Those are my two favorite characters. So that could do it, but I don't know. We'll see. So, all right. Well, it's been a lot of fun. We will talk to you guys in 2 weeks with episodes 5 and 6. Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to it.
So, I'm Debbie.
And I'm Michael. Later, nerds.
Bye.